Good morning and welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Liz Hoffman, your host of the show. Faith and Family is underwritten by our friends at Concordia University, Wisconsin. So we want you to be sure and check out their website and all the good things that they have to offer. We also have a link to Concordia on our website, kfuo.org. This week on the show, we're discussing the topic of spring break, and we'll be giving you some ideas how to keep your kids occupied while they are home. Now, remember, you, our listeners, get to be a part of the show, so we'd like you to call or email your questions in and our comments for our expert. You can call or email anytime. It doesn't have to be just during the show, but during this hour, we'd like you to call in St. Louis, 314-505-7850, or if you're out of St. Louis, 800-730-2727. You can also email your questions or comments to family@kfuo.org. So let's jump into today's subject, and all week here on Faith and Family, we're talking about spring break and what to do with your kids. Today we're going to talk books and reading and how to make it fun for your kids so they'll want to read. We've got an expert to help turn the pages, so to speak, of our discussion. Dr. Stephen Witt is an associate professor of education at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and the director of the Graduate Reading Program. He has a PhD in education, and he's a licensed reading specialist. Dr. Witt presents at various state and national conferences supporting teachers as they engage their students in becoming lifelong readers. This summer, he'll be presenting at the iTeachK National Conference, the Extraordinary Educators Conference, and the 2013 LEA Convocation, offering practical suggestions for engaging and emerging 21st century readers. He's married to Martha, and they have 5 children and 2 grandchildren. Dr. Witt, thank you so much for joining us on Faith and Family.
You are welcome. Good morning, Liz, and blessed Holy Week to you.
Thank you, and to you as well. We're very excited to talk with you about reading this week. Now, reading hasn't always come easy for you, has it?
No. I was a struggling emergent reader early on, too, and that is interesting and ironic, kind of the path that led me to direct a large graduate reading program here in Wisconsin. And that's the passion I have, wanting kids to become lifelong readers and weave books into their lives.
Well, tell us a little bit about your struggles that you had.
Sure. I talk often to my undergrad students about the importance of weaving literacy into their life and drawing on the mentors that they have. I went to some great graduate schools, Concordia, Texas, Concordia, I teach at Concordia, Wisconsin. I went to the University of Texas, received my PhD abroad, did a residency in Australia. But I go way back to first grade, about spring break at this time, and I was a struggling reader. My first grade teacher went to my mom and said, "Stephen isn't going to pass first grade. He's a struggling reader," and I couldn't read in first grade. And after that, my mom had me read to her, read with her, read to her while she was doing the dishes, read to her as we were driving to school. She read with me at night, and from that point on, I read everything, as my brother said, from the cereal boxes in the morning to comic books at night, and my reading skills kind of ebbed and flowed throughout my life. And I kind of want the listeners to think about the ebb and flows of their reading life, because that happens to us as readers as we go along, and especially in adolescence, it kind of takes the right book or the right author to hit your hands, and maybe the listeners can share with us the book that hit their hands when they were an adolescent. It kind of brings you back into it, but it takes the right book, and it also takes the right book to fit not only your level but your interest to bring you into becoming a successful reader. Because there's many things that can cause frustration as a reader. And many things that my mom did way back when I was a first grader, I do right now as a reading specialist. The reciprocal relationship that a parent can have is so vital. Reading on the lap of a parent, the repeating readings that we do, the poetry readings, the sharing of songs, the pointing at the text, it's so vital that the mentorship and the role that the parent or the guardian or the grandparent can have with young children early on.
And when you're an adult, like your mother was, it's easy to see how absolutely important it is to read everything you can get your hands on when you're young. And you've seen firsthand the effects of reading and lack of reading has on children when they're in high school, college, or beyond. Tell us about what you've seen in this.
Well, I like to think of reading as being thinking. If we think of reading as being thinking from kindergarten, first grade, maybe we won't have the comprehension struggles that we see with students in third grade or in middle school or even on into high school and into college. Right now there's a focus in the schools with something called the Common Core, and maybe you've heard of that, but students are having trouble navigating nonfiction texts, and they come oftentimes into high school and college with a lack of skills on how to navigate nonfiction texts, whether it's a textbook or some other text that they really struggle with. And a lot of times students or children aren't illiterate, but they're resistant readers, or they're non-literate. They just don't want to read. And I think that early on we need to work with children for and find the passion in reading. And again, that starts with mentoring and modeling the joy of reading with a child, and also with the passion that a parent can have in their own reading life. Because I had a professor at the University of Texas who had the mantra that reading is caught by the books that we read.
Well, how would you describe, I guess, the reading level of today's children that are entering kindergarten?
Well, reading is developmental, and it really depends upon the impact that the parent has had with the children. And so the background that they've had with print awareness, you know, we talk about the five pillars of reading, and those being phonemic awareness. And that's whether the child has been exposed to the print and the sound connection between print and phonics, comprehension, vocabulary. And so if a child has a broad background, a print-rich environment, they're going to come into kindergarten well exposed, and usually they take off in reading. It's interesting. I go into a lot of schools and research. It's getting better, but research shows that the amount of time elementary students spend reading in reading class, could you guess at what it is?
Oh, boy, I don't know. Less than an hour.
In an actual reading class, research is showing they spend about 7 to 10 minutes reading.
Wow.
And do you know how you learn to play the piano?
Right.
By playing the piano?
With practice.
Right. And so you learn to read by reading. And so I'll go back to Dr. Gazak at the University of Texas. He and I worked at a summer camp together, and we started with kindergartners with the very first thing that probably you learn to read and that a kindergartner can read because they can identify it, and you know it's their name. And so we start with what we call a Go book, and I can share my email if some parents want access to this digital book. I'd be happy to share it, but it starts with Go, Sally, Sally, Go, and then it builds on other sight words. So anyway, back to that question about where children are at kindergarten. If we can get children into books that fit at the kindergarten level, and then they can become successful, they can launch into a successful career of becoming proficient readers.
Do you think that parents and preschool teachers and daycares in general could be doing a better job of teaching the children their letters and just the beginning steps of reading?
I think so, and I don't necessarily think that you need to know all the letters to even start reading. Again, it goes back to phonemic awareness and knowing, for example, in the word cat, when we read Cat in the Hat with Dr. Seuss, that there's three sounds in the word cat, as opposed to in the word bake. Bake has four letters, and there's just three sounds in there. So there's some neat phonemic awareness strategies that I would encourage preschools and parents with young preschoolers to do. You know, for example, you take a Play-Doh and you make a word worm with Play-Doh, and you can break apart your word worm with Play-Doh and divide it into cat, and you would divide it into C-A-T. And once children understand that the first letter is C and the last is T, and then you can begin to crash that word back together. Because oftentimes what parents do and teachers often do is the only strategy they can recall is to sound words out. And the English language is so complex and diverse, sounding words out is oftentimes the last strategy we want kids to learn.
Okay. What about the child's development? Does it really make a difference if he or she starts reading maybe before kindergarten, or for the child that doesn't start reading until maybe first grade? Does that make a difference down the road?
The earlier they read, they might become more successful in becoming more fluent, and comprehension will grow as they go on. But, you know, we've seen kids tend to catch up in about first grade. Fluency is closely connected to comprehension. And so, again, it goes back to getting children into books that are at the level where they can be fluent and successful.
You know, one thing that I've noticed with my own kids is even as babies, they would love to be read to, you know, even if it's just pointing at pictures and explaining what it is. And I believe I've read, too, that, you know, reading to even a baby is a good thing.
Right. And as you read with the baby, pointing at the pictures and pointing at the words and just getting the baby and the toddlers the print awareness concepts down, that you move from left to right, and reading books over with them, singing songs. Singing is so connected to reading concepts and reading labels. You know, children, young toddlers construct meaning. As you drive by McDonald's, they'll point at the golden arches and
that's right. They know those symbols. That's right.
Right.
Do you have some ideas for our listeners of some must-have books, maybe for the preschool age?
Sure. You know, I think any time you read poetry with children, I think poems are must-have for kids, because one of the most important things in reading is predicting. And so I do a lot of reading in schools, and I would encourage parents to do something called dialogic reading, in which, like if you're reading a Dr. Seuss book, like, "I do not like green eggs and ham, I do not like them, Sam, I," and then you ask the child to predict and read the next line with you. It's kind of like summarizing. Mm-hmm. So any Dr. Seuss books or any storytelling books that will that they can repeat. I shared yesterday in the school I was at the Itsy Bitsy Spider song, and the kids were surprised that it was also a book, and it also goes on to a second verse and a third verse, and so we also acted out the motions with it. If you can connect literacy and activities and motions, children will be able to memorize and rehearse and practice. And so there's also, you might remember the song, "How Much Is That Doggy in the Window?"
Right.
A lot, that's another song that's also a book that teaches a good story about a boy who works really hard for that doggy in the window.
Sure. Well, you know, and many parents and grandparents, they get their kids a little something at Easter time, and I was thinking, what better gift than a book of the Easter story? Of course, the Easter story is available for all levels of reading, and not only would you be encouraging reading, but you'd also be encouraging the message of the good news.
That's an outstanding idea. And I think, you know, one of the most important things to do is, and I encourage teachers and parents, is to build up your library. Whether it's in your classroom, you should have a class library, or the library for your children at home. I know we're in a digital age, but there's nothing more important than holding on to the book that you have and keeping the books and rereading them. You know, if you go to Australia, like I had the chance to, I want to go back there and reread it again. And so buying these books, I would suggest Paul Meyer's The Very First Easter.
Okay.
Is an outstanding Easter book that breaks it down, and it's fundamentally sound. God Gave Us Easter by Lisa Tonbergen is a great story. And, of course, Max Licato has multiple Easter books that would be great.
Wonderful.
As you color Easter eggs, Melody Carlson has the story of the resurrection egg that you could read while or after you color the Easter eggs. this weekend.
That's a wonderful idea. You're listening to Faith and Family here on KFUO. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Witt about the importance of reading to your children, even when they're on spring break. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Witt, or maybe you'd like to share a great book idea, give us a call, 800-730-2727, or email us, family@kfuo.org. We'll be addressing your questions and comments coming up on the second half of the show. Dr. Witt, give us some suggestions for parents of an elementary age child who maybe only reads when they absolutely have to.
Sure. I just want to jump back to another book that kind of is a must-have, Heaven is for Real. Have you heard of that children's book?
Uh-huh.
That would be an outstanding book to read at this time of year or at any time. It's an adult book, but it's also broken down into bite size for children's book. And then as far as trying to get the reluctant reader to read, I want to kind of go back to what interests the student and offering him choice. Choice is a huge motivation. You know, I know oftentimes in school the child is required to read certain books, and so as a parent I would want to make sure that you have a library card, which unlocks a lot of doors and a lot of places that the child can go to. So there are some new books out there that I would suggest. One book that I read with kids in first grade and I read with kids in fourth grade and sixth grade is called Lifetimes by David L. Rice, and it teaches some great life lessons. It's a nonfiction book that goes through lifespans of various different animals, and it teaches life lessons inside of it. For example, it tells the lifespan of a mayfly, and a mayfly, of course, lives only one day, but it talks about the amazing things that we can accomplish in one day. And then it goes on to talk about other animals. It talks about the earthworm. Do you know how long an earthworm lives?
No.
6 years. And an earthworm does tremendous things for us underground, and then it teaches us the life lessons about the things that we can do that people don't notice. And it talks about multiple other animals, and it ends up talking about boys and girls and how long we live. And, well, we really don't know, but God gives us a purpose that we can integrate. And so that would be a great, and it's a children's storybook, and it looks like it might be for second or third graders, but I think even other boys and girls at other ages might want to read that.
So you're saying more of find what their interest is and kind of go from there.
Right, right.
Wonderful. How do you feel about rewarding children for reading? For example, I know that a lot of schools do reading counts points. They'll have parties or treats, or they may give coupons for free pizza if you read so many books. Is that a good thing, or is that sending the wrong message?
I think that you have to find a balance. I would encourage that to try to spark an interest in children's literary lives for an intrinsic purpose. You know, I know a lot of schools might use different rewards that do inspire kids, but I think in building lifelong readers, we won't be with these kids 20 years from now, and we won't know what they have by their bedside. So if we can teach them big themes that are in books, like, for example, when we read with them Charlotte's Web and we watch Wilbur the Pig, we come to realize that friendship is one of the most important things in life, and it's biblical as well as an important thing in a book, and we understand Charlotte was generous to Wilbur the Pig. And I think if we read aloud to children and we share with them the things that we read in our lives, then the rewards, you might be able to use them alongside of the passion that you share with your own reading life, but I would kind of use them and not focus on them as much as I would as the intrinsic passion and mentoring that you do as a reader yourself, and using books as mentoring children.
And you and your wife have 5 children.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about how you've read with them and maybe some of the rewarding experiences you've had in the past with them.
That's a great question. We have 5 children, and 5 each of them is different in their literary lives. We span from right now, one is a businessman, and he ebbed and flowed in his reading life, and now he's graduating with his business degree from Concordia St. Paul. And my oldest daughter is a Lutheran teacher in her first year, and my number three child is actually in the Army, and he is flying drones. The other two are still at home, and I think the most inspirational thing that we did when they were younger were the devotions that we had with them in modeling and reading. What we would use were the bite-sized little visits with Jesus when we had a chance to be all together and read short scripture passages with them. And now my number four son, Noah, has some books that he has by his bedside. He might be, if he's not listening, but my most resistant reader. And so I try to continually encourage him. And I ordered the newspaper, even though it's the 21st century. I have the newspaper there because I like to read it, but I also find that he'll read the sports page because that's something he's interested in.
Right.
And I also bought him the Tony Dungy book, Uncommon, Finding Your Path to Significance. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but Tony Dungy actually lost one of his sons to suicide.
Okay.
And he wrote a book about the importance of relationships in your life and finding your Christian path and your Christian identity. So with my reluctant reader, I'm continually offering him books of choice that provide him significance, especially in his adolescent life. And then my youngest daughter she reads almost everything and anything that she can get her hands on. And I think especially during the adolescent life, we have to offer them good choices. I think I mentioned to you off the air that we are what we read.
Right.
Doctors say you are what you eat, and we have to offer a prescription for life of good books. I tell my undergrads to look in their professor's library and see what they're reading, and look in your own library to see what you are reading. So those are some good choices. My young daughter reads books by Laura Lean McDaniel, also The Soul Surfer, A True Story of Faith.
Right.
Is a great book. Chicken Soup books are outstanding little short stories of faith.
I was also going to ask you, there are countless reading tutorials online for all-age kids where they can read the book on the computer or they can read along while the computer narrates. With just a little over a minute left before we go to our break, tell us, is this an effective as far as learning to read, or would you prefer, or do you think it's better to turn the pages of a real book?
I think we need to make use of the 21st century tools that are available. And I have some great tools that I would like to share with you, but I also think that there needs to be a good balance between using a real book and making use of the 21st century digital applications that we have available, because we are teaching digital natives right now, digital readers.
Absolutely. And when we come back from the break, Dr. Witt also has three items he would like to stress when encouraging your children to have a love for reading. And you're listening to Faith and Family here on KFUO. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Witt about the importance of reading for children, even when they are on spring break. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Witt, we'd really like to hear from you during our show. You can share maybe a great book idea or maybe an idea that you do with your children that you'd like to pass along with our listeners. Give us a call, 800-730-2727, or email us family@kfuo.org. We're going to be addressing those questions coming up on the second half of the show. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Faith and Family at KFUO. I'm Liz Hoffman, and we're discussing spring break this week and how to get your kids enthused about reading a book or even two while they're on break. We would love for you, our listeners, to get on in on the discussion. If you have a question for Dr. Witt, give us a call from St. Louis, 314-505-7850, or outside of St. Louis, 800-730-2727. Or you can also email us, family@kfuo.org. We'd love to hear from you during this second half of our show. Dr. Witt, you have three themes that you would like to stress as far as encouraging your children to have a love for reading. Can you tell us about those three themes?
Well, I wanted to talk about mentorship, first of all, and I mentioned that kind of as I highlighted at the beginning of the show, as my mom and my parents were a mentor for me as a struggling reader. And I think that parents play a big role in mentoring as children grow up as readers, mentoring to the children what you read. And this can be the books that you have out, the books that you have in your library. This can happen also in church as we read the liturgy, as we sing the hymns, as we teach our young children the Lord's Prayer. Literacy is so much a part of our life. I talk to our students and teachers about literacy being the spine of the curriculum. Mentoring happens also with the books that we read, and we talked about this, that we want to expose our children to a wide variety of choices, but there's also some choices that are not so good out there, that we have to have choices within boundaries. And then also the mentorship happens with the friends that we pick, and reading is a social process. You know, I talk also with our undergrads and with the children, we do something called inquiry circles when we share the books that we read. When you go to a movie, one of the first things that you want to do when you walk out of the movie is talk about it. And I think that we need to talk about the good books that we are reading and share the books. And so I think mentoring kids in becoming reading and becoming readers has such a huge role in the life, and also a part of reading and literacy is writing. I think that's kind of left off to the side oftentimes because we often don't write. And I mentioned I was a struggling reader, and as I emerged to become a better reader, I oftentimes would write authors, and that's such a valuable thing that children can do today because you can find the author's email so readily available. And you can have a dialogue with the author, and they'll actually respond back. And I mentioned my daughter's a Lutheran teacher. There was an author's day a few weeks back, and she actually Skyped in several different well-known authors into her classroom. And the authors modeled to these first graders in her classroom how they came up with ideas in their stories to be the writers that they were. So I think that it's so important to do all those things as modeling. The other theme that I mentioned was getting into the right book with the strategies and skills. And oftentimes we don't think about this, but it's the text, and it's the interest, and it's who we are. And I use the analogy of going shopping for shoes. And when you go shopping for shoes, you have a purpose for the shoe that you're going to buy, whether it's going to be a running shoe or if you're going out for a wedding to buy a shoe if you're going to a fancy dinner. And so it is with a book. When you go into the library, you want to know the purpose for what you're going to be reading. If I read the Itsy Bitsy Spider, are we going to read about information about a spider, or do we want to read an adventure?
Right.
And then the book has to be just right and fit, or else we'll become frustrated, because you know what? That's what often happens in third or fourth grade. Students become frustrated because that's when textbooks are introduced oftentimes. And so in the reading language, we call it miscues. But I teach students if they miscue about three times on the very first page, it's probably not at the level and it doesn't fit. Like when you try a shoe on and it's uncomfortable and it doesn't fit, so you have to try another size on. and it has to match your interests and also has to fit you just right. And then as you grow as a reader, your shoe size or your book size will grow as well. So does that make sense?
Absolutely, yes. So for the child that just isn't grasping it or isn't interested in reading, but maybe he or she loves to be outside, you know, maybe find something in that order, something outside to learn more about the outdoors or sports or anything like that.
Right, right. And you know, oftentimes the question I'm asked most often, whether it's parents or my graduate students, is the adolescent boy who oftentimes is disengaged with reading. And so, you know, we talk about with them the 5 R's. It used to be the 4 R's, but read, relax, reflect, respond, and then rap. Actually, I did a rap with the little kid yesterday with a poem, but I mean rap about, which means talk about the book.
Right.
If you engage with the child or the adolescent about the book, they're more likely to want to keep reading, and they find it interesting. You know, whether it's a short story, and a lot of times adolescents want to read something that's just short bursts of things that they're interested in. Whether it's something about hunting. Now, my number 4 son just took hunter safety, and he wants to read about things that are engaging with hunting or being a mechanic. We want to draw in those interests. And you mentioned earlier being a 21st century child or bringing in those literacy skills. You know, I mentioned phonemic awareness. There's a lot of different sites that can help the emergent reader, whether it's listening to books. I don't know if you're familiar with starfall.net, which has various different levels from identifying letters to identifying sounds. And then
okay.
It also
yes, now that you say that, I am.
Interactive books. And then there's another site called Into the Book. If you could Google that, that goes up to the next level, and it draws on comprehension and visualizing and synthesizing skills. So those are a couple of interesting sites. And then if parents want to go to readingrocket.org,
that
would be for both parents and teachers, and it has a multitude of different reading strategies and skills, and also lists of a lot of the Newbery Award-winning books that are out there that the parents could, if they don't know a lot of the new current literature that's out there. There's a book called Charlie Joe Jackson's Guide to Not Reading. It's about a young boy who doesn't like reading, and he wrote about why he doesn't like reading.
Okay.
And that would be a great book for like a fifth or a sixth grader.
Now, what about, do you have any tips for maybe a moment when a child says, you know, no, I don't want to read, I'm not doing it?
Well, I had a teacher talk to me about, she wanted to teach creativity in her classroom. And I thought about that, and I don't think that we can teach creativity, but we can help foster it and nurture it. And sometimes we just have to allow children time to grow and play. When I moved to Wisconsin, I was out at Concordia Irvine. We moved across or nearby to a field and an area where there was a forest, and I watched it as I would go on runs, and there weren't many kids out there playing. And so I oftentimes think that maybe they're hopefully reading or writing, but oftentimes they're being shuttled from soccer practice to playing on the computer. I think we need to allow kids time to play and create and build forts in the woods and things like that. So I think that if we allow that time, and then also encourage and foster a love for reading alongside of that.
Now, you had mentioned before about boys. My boy he seems more interested in doing hands-on type things or physical activities. Is that pretty typical? Do girls typically read more than boys do?
In general, if we want to generalize, boys tend to want to be more active, and boys weren't built, as it were, to sit in rows and sit for 7 hours in school, but they want to be more engaged and be more hands-on. And that's where boys might want to engage and read and work with a manual on how to do something and how to create or construct something and how to, you know, tap into their interest if he wants to build something or if he wants to learn how to do an activity. Those are some literacy skills that, you know, you could bring into have him read that way.
That's a great idea. And I was just thinking of my daughter used to get caught reading after bedtime, or we'd have to make her stop reading when it was time to come to dinner or do her chores. And that was in elementary school, and now we're into the middle school, kind of too cool for that. And we've noticed the reading time has been reduced a little bit. Should we be concerned?
I think that it's important to talk to your daughter, talk to her about, and look at what the other interests are that she's doing to fill up her time, because we still have 24 hours in the day. And research shows that the more you read, the more successful you will actually be in school, and especially in college. So then, you know, maybe it might be that the choices, she might not know the choices or books that are available as she's grown as a reader.
Okay.
And what books are available.
And do you have any suggestions for teenagers? Maybe they want to share the love of Christ, but they kind of need some direction. Is there any books in that order?
There are some good inspirational, actually, that where we can pull some Christian themes out. There are some Lurline McDaniel books that I mentioned that my daughters have read that have some good courage and struggles in them, and don't specifically talk about sharing of Christ, but if you can read those, there are also some good devotional books. I'm trying to draw on the name of one. Jesus Calling by Sarah Young is a great daily devotional book for young girls that would be a good read, whether it's at night or in the morning, for young girls or that want to learn how to integrate their faith and share their faith. You know, and I also think for children or adolescents of any age to turn back to the Bible and read the Bible stories are kind of like letters from home to draw strength from. I think it's important always to turn back to Scripture and that we don't lose sight of the stories that are in the Bible, whether it's the story of Ruth or Jacob wrestling with God, that you know, we can draw on those stories too.
That's great advice. And you're listening to Faith and Family here on KFUO. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Witt about the importance of reading for children, even when they're on spring break or summer break. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Witt, or maybe you'd like to share a great book idea that you have, give us a call, 800-730-2727, or email us, family@KFUO. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Dr. Witt, what about the teenagers? I mean, that is such a precious time when there's so many temptations out there. Do you have some other book suggestions for those teens that are faced with temptations?
Well, I was talking about the ebbs and flows that go through your life, and one of the books that my daughter is actually reading in school right now is The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. I don't know if you've read that book.
No, I have not.
It's an older book, and it's not necessarily a Christian book, but it talks about the struggles that adolescents go through in finding their identity. And oftentimes in books, whether they're Christian or not, we can find Christian themes that we can identify with. And this, it actually was kind of merged into a TV show, and a lot of times adolescents like to either watch the show or read the book first, but my daughter and I are having a great discussion because I mentioned earlier as a prompt in the show that the listeners could call in with a book that kind of set them on their way as a reader from fifth grade on into adolescence, and Outsiders was that book for me that drew me back into reading.
Okay, great.
Because it kind of gave me the strength. There's a character in there who he wrote from the end to the beginning about his life story and the struggles that he had and how he was able to connect as an outsider dealing with other people and how this built him up as his identity. And so I want to ask you, is there a certain book that you connected with as a reader as you grew up that you can remember?
Oh, I guess I would have to say Charlotte's Web. That was one of my favorites, and
really?
Still have my copy that my godmother gave me today. So yeah, and of course I've passed it on to my daughter, and that's things that you can treasure too throughout your life. They become special to you.
Right, and that was one of the books that I mentioned as a must-have is Charlotte's Web, and
right.
it's so good to read those books and also kind of identify the themes that emerge out of there of the friendship and generosity.
Definitely. Well, we do have a caller. James would like to have a question, or he has a question or comment for us. James, thank you for joining Faith and Family.
Thank you for having me.
You have a question or comment for Dr. Witt?
Yes, Doctor. How important is it to introduce nursery rhymes and then the reading tools of fairy tales and lessons of fables as literacy and reading tools?
Hello, James. Thank you for calling in. That is an outstanding question. It is very important, and a lot of those fairy tales and nursery rhymes are being lost, actually, in our culture because they aren't being read to the young children. So I would encourage those to be read and then reread with our children.
Yeah, because I can remember that my brother and I would read the fables and try to learn the lessons from them. And we had to, one of the things we liked as a family was the learning of the nursery rhymes and things of that sort, and we kind of do that with the kids in our family today. But one of the books that started me off was Green Eggs and Ham.
Uh-huh.
and Chippy Chipmunk's series. And I find myself today being sort of a change agent, like the little guy in the Green Eggs and Ham, how he was persistent in trying to make that kind of change.
That's outstanding.
I'll hang up and listen to you.
No, thank you. That is outstanding. Uh-huh. I love that. See, I love to hear people and how they connect with the book and then how they come back to it. That's fabulous.
Thank you so much for calling, James. Also, Dr. Witt, I was thinking about older kids helping maybe their younger siblings. Is that, I guess it would be helpful for an older child to help their younger brother or sister in teaching them how to read?
That is excellent and outstanding for the older child to model and read with the younger student. You know, my first teaching position, I actually taught in a two-room school. So we had to, it was grades 4 to 8 in one classroom. So we did a lot of buddy reading and a lot of shared reading. And then as I grew into being principal of a larger school, we implemented a program called Crossing Generations, and where we had grandparents come into the school and actually read with the younger children. And in that larger school, we also had the eighth graders go down into kindergarten and read with the kindergartners, and they thought that was just so wonderful. And another thing to integrate writing into reading, when I work with schools, oftentimes teachers will have children write book reports, the dreaded book report after you read a whatever, Charlotte's Web or Where the Red Fern Grows.
Right.
I try to make things more authentic, and what you read in the newspaper online is a book review. So we try to merge that into a book review. Or else when we take field trips, we do reviews. We took a second grade class locally here to Red Robin, and we did a restaurant review, and we modeled how to write a review, and then we wrote a restaurant review of Red Robin, and they actually put that up on their board because it was a five-star restaurant review that we did of them. So I think if you can integrate reading and writing, and for the young kids too, in the kitchen with mom when she's baking and following the directions of the recipe.
Right. Read that to me while I do this. Yeah, that's
right.
Definitely a great idea. What about the child that tells tales or stories and maybe has an interest in writing? What books can you encourage? I guess what kind of books should they be? Should they try to write books, or what would you encourage that?
Sure. I think what writing always comes from our personal experiences, and so that's where I would start with, from writing from what you've experienced personally, and that can be whether it's poetry or whether it's something that's happened within the last 24 hours. And one of the writing techniques I use with the students I work with is to just write, and you might brainstorm a list of things you've done in the last 24 hours, and then you write about one of those items. So as you merge into becoming a writer, as you are a reader, I talk about reading like a writer and writing like a reader. So as you read things, you read them like you want to be a writer, and then you write like a reader. And one of the most powerful words in the sentence, and we oftentimes think it's the adjective, it's the vivid verbs that writers choose. And students start to notice that. And then just start writing. Like when you turn on hot water, what comes out first?
Starts out cold, doesn't it?
Right. So you just need to start writing. And then your writing is going to improve and it's going to get better. And you go through the writing process, and that's how we conquer the power of the white, and we just write.
So give them any type of a writing prompt and let them take it from there.
Right. And, you know, just like in at home, find a nook or a corner to read where they're comfortable, and the same thing goes for writing.
Definitely. And what about the, I guess, a space? Should you have a space every day or where you plan to read? Is that a good idea to kind of have, well, this is my reading area?
I think so. Whether, you know, you have the stack of books next to your bedside or whether you have a chair, in, like if you would have that reading corner in the classroom or you have it at home, I think so. And I think having a variety of books and letting children know that it's okay if you start a book and you just don't like it, you know, it doesn't match your interest. We talked about the shoe size not fitting in. If it doesn't match your interest,
right,
it might be okay during the spring break time. And also, you know, as we move through spring break or Easter here and we come to summer, as teachers we find out there's a big summer slide. So we really want to encourage children during the summer to keep on reading.
Definitely. What about, should we encourage our kids to use a thesaurus as a tool?
Yes. You know, I talked about the power of writing and the power of words to, you know, to expand vocabulary. And one of the activities I use is the game called Taboo, to write a topic and write all the words that you know about it. And then we play a game with it to see if we can guess the topic without using those words. The more exposure children have to books and words, the larger vocabulary they have.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Stephen Witt, we're wrapping things up here. Maybe could you give us a brief summary of some of the topics that we've hit on today so that people can have a good idea of, I guess, maybe getting their children more enthused about reading?
I would just encourage to have a literacy life and that reading matters, and especially as a Christian, because faith comes from hearing the message as we walk with Jesus this week, and that being a mentor to children, a mentor in your reading life and a mentor in their faith life, and that getting kids into just write books that fit. And there's multiple reading strategies and skills. If they would like to email me, I have a whole list of iPod phonemic awareness strategies and skills that I could share with them. And then offering a variety of choices within boundaries and just being a good model for kids.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stephen Witt. We've enjoyed talking with you today about reading and how important it is for our kids. Dr. Witt, you'll be speaking at various different state and national conferences this summer, and we wish you all the best with us.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for having me on. I enjoyed it.
We are glad to have you. Coming up tomorrow on Faith and Family, we're going to have some fun ideas for teaching your kids the real meaning of Easter. Dr. Melanie Wilson will share her knowledge and ideas for you to enjoy your kids while they're home for the Easter celebration. Faith and Family is underwritten by Concordia University of Wisconsin, so be sure to check out their website. They have all kinds of great information for you on their website. Now, remember that you, our listeners, can and be a part of the show. You can call or email your questions for our expert. If you would like to make a comment on our 24-hour comment line, that number is 314-505-7839. And during the show, the number in St. Louis, 314-505-7850, or out of St. Louis, 800-730-2727. Thanks for joining us on Faith and Family.